What is happening, everybody? John Middlecoff, 3 and Out Podcast. About Monday, late afternoon, just hit the record button. Just about to spit some fire, because that's what we do here in the podcast world. At least we attempt to do. And back from the combine, feeling a lot better. For about Friday, you know, Thursday was a long morning after a late Wednesday. Luckily, I had McDermott and Nagy already in the can. It's a little inside podcast/radio. You always want to have some interviews in the can, so you don't have to do quite as much when you're putting a show together. Like today, I got a guy, I don't know if you've heard of him, Andy Reid, Super Bowl champion. He's on the pod for about 27 minutes, so you just got to build the show around the interview that you have in the can. And I also did Howie Roseman, that'll be later this week, and you kind of build it around there. But and that's why when I talk to these guys, I wasn't as enamored with everything in the moment and who they were signing. It's more just big picture stuff. And it's kind of what I did with Coach Reid. A little bit about the Super Bowl, but just about his team and about himself. And he was awesome. He gave me 27 minutes of his time, which clearly not every coach is doing podcasts at the Combine. But we're going to dive into Tom Brady. We're going to dive into something I read today in Albert Breer's MMQB. We'll go over some of the things that jumped out to me at the Combine. Some of the players at the Combine. And then, like always, at John Middlecoff is my Instagram. Slide right in those DMs. It's how we interact with the people on this show. This is a people show. And the Instagram DMs is my name, at John Middlecoff, is how I get in touch with you guys. I also appreciate everyone that went to Apple and left a review on 3 and Out. If you listen to the show, you like the show, if you could do that, I greatly appreciate it. It's cool whenever, like in India, I ran into a couple people that listen to the show just randomly, and it's always inspiring. It really is. I mean, if no one listened to the show, I wouldn't do it. Now, maybe I would still in some way do it like I did my entire life. You just talk about football, whether it's with a friend or text message or whatever, but it is cool having a lot of people listening, and a big reason to that is Colin. But obviously, when you guys tell your friends about me, recommend me. I'm a big grassroots word of mouth guy, so I really do appreciate that. Leave a review, and I thank you very much. Start with Tom Brady, and it's starting to get a little weird. Like I'm starting to just felt like he was coming back, then it feels like he's leaving. And here's the reality: we have no freaking clue what Tom Brady's going to do, and that's kind of cool. Like you know what sometimes makes a great story is when, and I'm in the story business. You know, I would, if I was a Patriot fan, I would not be happy. But for most of us that aren't Patriot fans, that just follow sports, like, this is a cool, huge, potentially historic moment. It really is. And, like, last year, for example, when it became pretty abundantly clear where I live, like, Kevin Durant was not coming back for the Warriors. I think it was, like, locked in stone probably about halfway through his third season. It's like, this guy's not coming back. And then he left. Now, we didn't know exactly where Durant was going to go, and he turns out he tore his Achilles. But luckily in the NBA, unlike the NFL, you can have like a torn ACL or torn Achilles and still get a max. Not even that big a deal. Remember Bryce Harper? I guess it would have been 2 years ago now. One of the most hyped baseball players. Now, you can argue overhyped, but we'd known about him since high school. He won the MVP, I think, in 2015. I enjoy him, just he is entertaining. But we kind of got the vibe, like, he's not coming back to the Nationals. We didn't know where he was going to go, but in baseball, it's clear you can only go to a couple teams when you're a super high-priced guy. So when he went to the Phillies, it wasn't that crazy. If I was going to do a parallel to this Brady situation, and this is not apples to apples, I might choose LeBron when he left Cleveland the first time, and he went to Miami. Because I vividly remember, I would imagine, like most sports fan, it was a little before like player empowerment and just guys doing whatever the hell they wanted. The team was really good. Now, Tom Brady's, if he leaves, is leaving a team that he's won 6 championships with. LeBron didn't win a championship, but I did feel like most of us felt kid from Akron, he was going to go back to Cleveland, but he might leave. And I remember thinking like he's probably going to go to the Bulls or he's going to go to the Knicks. And then he went to the Heat. Which made sense once he went to the Heat because Dwayne stayed and Chris Bosh came. But I think this situation is starting to feel like he definitely could stay. But he also definitely could go to the Titans. That makes a lot of sense. He's boys with Vrabel. Their team is well-equipped. They just were in the AFC Championship game. They could bring back Derrick Henry, re-sign Conklin, draft some guys, and have a team that be a preseason, you know, sexy pick to make a Super Bowl. I guess not make another. They haven't made one in 20-plus years. But, like, if he went to the Titans and they keep Derrick Henry, they re-sign the right tackle, they have a good offseason like they did last year, you would go, yeah, they should win 11, 12, 13 games. He goes to the Raiders or the Chargers. I would say he goes to the Raiders would feel a little bit more potentially like a money grab because they've made the playoffs one time in 17 years. Where if you went to the Chargers, it would feel a little money grab-ish. But I also think you could justify it by going, well, they have Mike Williams, they have Keenan Allen, it is L.A., they got Derwin James, they got Joey Bosa, they got Ingram. The team's pretty good. So you could justify it. It's just, there's just a huge unknown. Like, you could convince me he was going to go to the Titans, to the Chargers, stay, I guess, harder with the Chargers because their owner is so cheap. But even Dean Spanos, the cheapest man alive, who, by the way, I kind of got some dirty looks from people in Chargers gear at the Combine, which, you know, I'm not trying to, you know, stroke my own ego here, but makes me feel pretty good. Like, I like knowing that teams kind of listen or that someone tells them about it. Like, it's, you know, I don't claim to be Colin Cowherd or Mike Francesa here. Not everyone's listening. But when I know you're listening, I get a dirty look. It's like, ah, my shit works. So, I'd be, I guess, a little surprised if they paid him $60, $70 million to go there. But you'd have to be a moron to not realize you need to move the needle and sell some tickets. Look at what Steve Ballmer did. He's like, well, if we're going to play second fiddle with the Lakers, you better believe we're going to put all of our chips in the middle of the table. Whether I got to buy the Forum, whether I got to do everything I can to get Kawhi Leonard, whether if Kawhi goes, I'm only going to come there, you better move heaven and earth to get Paul George. Like, at least he's trying. So you would think the Chargers might try a little bit if Tom tells him he's interested. But I also thought, like, if Tom leaves, like, you can get a divorce. I've never been married, but I do know some people that have been divorced, especially people with kids, and you can have a very cordial relationship. Sometimes humans just grow apart, and that's a personal relationship. Think how many professional relationships, especially ones that aren't short-lived. It's not like Belichick and Brady have been a partner for 5 years. They've been together for 20 years. That is a long time to be, quote-unquote, business partners. Because that's, let's just make it simple, that's what they've been. You could say one's quarterback, one's coach, whatever. They've been a tandem. They've been a dynamic duo together. 20 years is a long time. Especially when one guy's role is to kind of yell at you. Even if you are Tom Brady, and definitely the last decade, you've been one of the biggest stars, like the history of sports. And at this given moment in 2020, he's the most famous NFL player ever. He's the most accomplished NFL player ever. But the way they operate in New England is there is a hierarchy and Bill's at the top. So it's a partnership, but it's a weird partnership. It's not like Tom can yell at Bill and ultimately Bill in the partnership. It's not a 50-50 split because Bill's the one deciding. So if they were close to 50-50, it would still be 51-49 at the best case Tom Brady style because Bill's making all the decisions. Do you think Tom would have traded Logan Mankins, gotten rid of Wes Welker, and the countless moves over the years? Probably not. Probably not. But that's the way Bill operates. So I think sometimes, and I've been forced into it a couple times. I'm not comparing myself to Tom Brady by any means, but sometimes change, and I'm a huge believer in change, sometimes kind of lights a creative fire to you, or a personal fire, or however you want to quantify it. And sometimes change is forced on us. You know, a girl breaks up with us, job fires us. Sometimes we control it. We just leave a job. We break up with her. We start a random new company. Because we want change. We aspire to do something else. So if Tom did leave, maybe it could be as simple as like Bill wanted him back. Bill would have had him back at whatever number he got. And Tom just thought at 43 years old, coming down the home stretch of his career, maybe it was just time to do something different. Because we don't know Tom for a guy that's so famous that well. I feel like I knew Peyton Manning pretty well. I feel like I got, even though he's a different cat. Like, I know Aaron Rodgers pretty well. We knew Brett Favre pretty well. I'm sure in like 5 or 6 years, we'll know Mahomes pretty well. Like, we kind of know Tom, but we kind of don't. Like, he's kind of a unique character. We kind of know Bill, but not really. Like, they're kind of just outlier humans for their success because we don't get a great, like when Pat Riley blew up or Phil Jackson. I mean, these guys were writing books, or Kobe or Shaq or the players I listed. Like we, it felt like we kind of know what makes them tick. Like I know what makes Belichick and Brady tick. They want to win. They want to kick your ass. But clearly Brady for the last 15 years has been taking discounts. Belichick, every time, now he wouldn't do that. Then he does it. Like, he shocks people all the time. Oh, he never pays anybody. Then he makes Stephon Gilmore the highest paid corner in the league. He becomes defensive player of the year. He, you know, 2 years ago, he tried to trade Gronk to the Lions. Gronk was like, you do that, I retire. Blew up. Now, that was understandable because Belichick does that stuff sometimes. But this, to me, what makes this story really cool and really fascinating is I got no freaking clue what's going to happen. You know, I, for my own selfish personal football lover in me, I kind of hope Tom stays. I like Tom and Bill. They've been a fun combo to watch. They've been great for the NFL. But I also, if you told me Tom went to the Titans, him and Vrabel, they bring back Derrick Henry, I'm cool with that too. You told me he went to Vegas and the Vegas Raiders, like, yeah, I can dig it. I don't really want him to go to the Chargers. But, you know, if Tom, I don't even know, the more I think about it, like, would Tom Brady go play for the Chargers in a split team market? That one's probably, the more I think about it, harder to wrap my head around. But Tom's a football guy. And what do football guys do? Well, who's on the team? You just go through the roster. It's pretty freaking good. And then I read stories they're going to franchise Hunter Henry. So you got Hunter Henry, Keenan Allen, Mike Williams. You got players there. They need some offensive linemen. We know the guys they have on defense. So while it doesn't make that much sense financially, football-wise, it makes some sense. Even Anthony Lynn, I don't know if Tom Brady would play for Anthony Lynn, but makes the story cool. And I'll never forget, I was living in Philly at the time when I watched the decision with LeBron. We were on the edge of our seat because we did not know where he was going to go. And we got no clue where Tom Brady's going to go, and that's fun. Okay, before we get into Andy Reid, I wanted to touch on something that I saw, and I think it was a fascinating quote. Because I saw during the combine, might have been on Wednesday or Thursday. Hell, it might have been Friday. I think Schefter wrote James Bradbury, the corner for the Carolina Panthers, and his representations are planning on getting $15 million a year. Now, I think sometimes when we hear numbers, like if you're a $10 million player in 2020, your $10 million accounts for 5% of the salary cap. Because the salary cap is going to be $200 million. But when you sign free agents and you start bidding against another team or multiple teams to sign a guy and you get guaranteed money, $40, $50, $60 million, you are tied to that player because the majority of guys on your team, you can get off any given year. Obviously, you have your core guys. Your quarterback's usually highly paid. And then your three or four guys, like your DeForest Buckners, your George Kittles, your Tyreek Hills, your Travis Kelce's, Fletcher Cox, your Bobby Wagner's. I'm even separating from the quarterback. But like your core guys that you pay a lot of money that you're not going to cut, J.J. Watts. But the majority of guys, like you want to be pretty fluid on. And when you overpay for guys in free agency, $40-plus million in guaranteed, you're usually tied to those guys for a couple seasons. And when it's not your own player, there is a bust factor. Because it's probably more of a plug-and-play league than ever before. Just because so many teams are running similar schemes. One, the coaching turnover's never been crazier. Two, the college guys, most colleges now are doing the same things. But defense, definitely more than offense, can have major mistakes. You think a guy's going to fit and he doesn't fit. That's why I think you see so many like one-year rentals on defense hit. Because you don't. There's a huge unknown for defense. Here's what Albert Breer got a text from a... he did this thing on the MMQB where he texted a bunch of NFC and AFC GMs and personnel people. And here was one of the responses. My biggest takeaway is a lot of agents are shooting for the moon on average players. I think some are going to be surprised what the market actually is. And I know Collins talked about this. I know everyone worth their salt in business talks about it all the time. I have no problem, quote unquote, overpaying for something that's a premium. If I have to, quote unquote, overpay for Patrick Mahomes or Khalil Mack or Aaron Donald, if I have to overpay for Whole Foods, if I'm Jeff Bezos, if I have to overpay for oceanfront property on Hawaii, I'm usually not going to get screwed over. But when you overpay on average in business and especially in sports, it's where you get in trouble. And we see it all the time. Most players, given the way the sport is set up now with this thing called the franchise tag, if you are allowed to hit free agency, for the most part, now we see some guys last year, Za'Darius Smith. Za'Darius Smith's a baller. I don't know how that guy hit free agency, but he did. I mean, he's elite. But most times guys hit free agency, they got red flags. Or they're just not good enough. You offer them extensions at a low rate, and they don't want to take it. James Bradberry, I can't pay $15 million. I don't care that that's only 7.5% of my cap. Because if there are going to be multiple teams bidding on him, that he might get $50 million guaranteed money. I can't do it. Like Jadeveon Clowney, for example. I'm not a huge Clowney guy. His effort can be hit or miss. He's had some injuries. But I will say this for him. When he does try, and his just natural talent, he can change a game. And a ton of guys that you're going to see are going to become free agents are not game changers. That doesn't mean certain guys won't have huge impacts and will be worth the money. But the majority of guys every year in free agency are just not. The 49ers, for example, are in a situation where they gave Dee Ford a lot of money. They traded a second-round pick for him. And as of recording this, there's been reports they might bring back Arik Armstead. There's a chance Dee Ford either gets traded or cut. Because the majority of guys on your team, I've been in these free agent meetings, I've been in these draft meetings. You're trying to replace basically 90% of your roster every year, every day. Every day I went into the office, I'm evaluating guys upgrade at every position or potential upgrade. Now, you might not have access to get those guys. They might not be available. You can't trade for them. You're not drafting high enough to get them. But that's the whole point of a personnel department. You're literally trying to upgrade your entire team 24/7, 365. Now, there are team dynamics and, you know, leadership, and there are a lot of stuff that variables that factor into that. But that's just a reality of pro football, pro sports. And the most powerful thing in the NFL is you have access with a lot of these contracts. Most guys aren't under Aaron Donald, Khalil Mack, Julio Jones, Odell Beckham type deals. Most guys are basically year to year. It's why teams are so fluid and they can pivot so quickly. But you have to be very, very careful. And I think these agents are probably licking their chops because they go, there's never been more available free agency money. Well, have there ever been, every single year, it feels like a pretty average class. Ndokwe, Shaq Barrett. You start reading about the guys that are already getting franchised. The top guys don't hit the market. It's why if they ever did, if Ndokwe became a true free agent, he'd probably get more money than Khalil Mack. Simply based on supply-demand, he'd be the best free agent, true free agent, to hit the market in years. Five or six teams would be offering him an astronomical amount. Is he worth more than Khalil Mack? No. But Khalil Mack didn't get to hit free agency. Khalil Mack signed a deal when he wasn't even technically a free agent. So did Aaron Donald. I would be very, very careful if I was a GM. We're not overpaying average. And the league's never had more intelligent people running teams. For a league that's had historically a lot of meatheads as GMs, those days are over. Smart guys are running the league. Even the quote-unquote football guys, like Mike Mayock is not some moron. John Lynch is a Harvard guy. John Schneider knows what the hell he's doing. Belichick, Roseman, these guys are smart. Bill O'Brien, you never know, but I don't think he has much cap space. Chris Ballard knows what he's doing. Brett Veach, even the craziest contract Veach signed was to Sammy Watkins, it's basically just was a two-year, $30 million deal. And Sammy's pretty good. When Sammy's on, he's fine. James Bradberry, that name stood out to me. And as I text a couple of buddies in the league, they're like, yeah, he's okay starter, solid starter. I can't give solid starters nine figures, especially when I have to factor in the money I have to guarantee and how that limits my cap. So just something to keep an eye on this offseason, because most of these free agents are not the premium guys, but some of them are going to get premium contracts, and those are usually the ones that don't work out in the long run. Okay, here with Super Bowl champion, Coach Andy Reid. How you doing, Coach?
I'm doing good, John. Appreciate it.
Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. Great experience.
I thought you were just going to walk off into retirement or go to L.A. or just go to Maui or something. Just keep on coaching?
Yeah, no. Listen, I mean, I love doing what I'm doing. So, and I've got a bunch of good people that I get a chance to work with. So I'm too young to retire.
Does it feel any different?
Not really. I mean, I've got a couple free meals, but that's, you know, I feel about that. I mean, that's good. But other than that, it's basically the same. I mean, we go as coaches now. I know as players, the guys are out there more than what we are. So we're contained in our building working and or at the combine working. So other than the guys congratulating you, it's really all the same.
Patrick didn't invite you to go to the fight last weekend?
No, he didn't. I know a lot of people were there, but I chose to stay at home.
Do you feel, sometimes, I guess every time you go to the Super Bowl or make a long run in the playoffs, your schedule, it's a good thing, but you're a little behind in the way you'd normally be if your season just ended after week 17. Now, obviously, that doesn't happen much for you, so you're used to being in the playoffs, but going this far and then winning it, then even more obligations. You guys have the ceremony and the parade, which was really big and a big deal for that city. Do you feel caught up where you normally would be at this time?
Well, I'm getting there, yeah. So, the scheme eval is the thing that we've had to dig in on and kind of speed up. So we've done that. Personnel wise, I'm in a pretty good spot. Brett Veach keeps me abreast all that, so I feel pretty comfortable with that. And this helps being at the combine. That helps to get down here and have another shot at talking to these guys and evaluating them. So, I think I'm doing pretty good as far as being caught up.
So the scheme eval, you don't just put a stamp on a Super Bowl champs and don't have to look back on it?
No, you got to stay one step ahead of the McCoys, man. It's that's how it goes. And that's a fun part, is going back, looking at what you did, kind of evaluating the guys, maybe what you can, that extra little thing that you can give them to help make them even greater than what they are. And we kind of go through each position and do that and see if we can't expand the offense and take it to another level. Defensively, Spags has got a ton of room because this was just his first year. So he's excited to get going and do that same thing with his guys. And he's got quite a few guys returning and can take their role up even another notch.
I mean, I think sometimes we forget Patrick is really young. Tyreek Hill is not that old. You have a lot of premium. Even Travis Kelce is not, 38 years old. You have a lot of younger players that still could. Obviously, the quarterback has a long time, but even the key guys around him. Is that something that you focus on this offseason? I know you talked about it after the Super Bowl, keeping these guys focused. Sometimes you can, feel your own praise a little bit. It's natural.
Sure. Well, the distractions you mentioned that they're not only happening during the Super Bowl that week or a couple weeks up to it, but afterwards, people want a piece of you, and which is understandable. And it's important that you do that. Choose the ones you want to take care of. But other than that, then you got to get back to work, and you can't lose that fundamental principle of work, and how hard it is to actually get to that spot. So I mentioned that to our guys in the post meeting. Before they took off for the off season, and go enjoy it. Take some time off like you do every year. Take some time off, but then understand where we're at and what we need to get done this off season so we can put together another good season.
You feel good about just knowing that Mahomes and the Honey Badger, the way they're wired, it's probably not going to be that big a deal.
Yeah, well, I feel that way. I mean, both of them have warned me out about getting the iPads and everything's done on iPads, as you know. So getting those and going back through every one of their plays to review on their own, which is a healthy thing. So, again, that's them. I mean, that's how they roll. And those are your two primary leaders on each side of the football. And as crazy as it is, they're very similar personality types when it comes to the sport. Both of them are good guys, work hard, and are highly intelligent. off the field and on the field. So it's you know, it's good to have those guys as leaders for you.
I know they're different type players, but you coached a guy in Philadelphia who's actually now in the Hall of Fame, and Brian Dawkins in the Honey Badger. It feels like there are parallels there just in the unique galvanizing personalities on their side of the ball, and the way your defense, like you talked about Spags' his first year, but those were the last four or five games. You guys were allowing under 20 points every game, and how well you played in the Super Bowl. What did he mean to your program?
Yeah, well, he's one of those innate leaders. So you want to say you want to develop leadership and those. Well, you kind of have that or don't have it, and he's been blessed with that, where he's not afraid to get out of the box and challenge himself and challenge guys around him, knowing that his closet's clean, you know, that he's going to put in the work and the time, and he's not going to shortchange it. And that's how Doc was. And both of them are now in the same type of defense, where Jim Johnson took Doc's strengths and made that into what Brian ended up being, with the tenacity and skill that Brian has. And Spags has done the same thing with the Badger. He's taken him in and put him in positions where he can be successful. Now, you can do that. I mean, you got to have the tools to be able to do that with. So Daron's got that. I mean, he's gifted. He wants to be great. I mean, that's a driving force behind it. And Spags has got a scheme that allows that to take place. And there's even more room to grow within the scheme. So it's, you know, it should be a fun thing to watch as we go forward.
He's really one of the great stories in the NFL. I mean, I would imagine a character reject many teams coming out of college. About 3 years after that, Larry Fitzgerald's calling him the heart and soul of their team. That's Larry Fitzgerald in his career. Then, you know, what's he like being around the person?
Well, yeah, and you knew that at LSU. I mean, he had the leadership. He loved to play. So it's the environment that you grow up in can be tough at times on guys. And so he's learned from his mistakes. A lot of people don't learn from mistakes. So he's learned from experience. And now what you got is this beautiful rose. I mean, he's a class act, and he does so much for the community, especially for just being there a short period of time. And he loves kids. He's a good father, and you know, and then the football part of it comes next. So he does a heck of a job with that.
Okay, let's talk about Super Bowl week. By the time you guys got there, your plan's all in place. You approached, I would imagine, the week before like a normal week. How much tweaking went on, I guess, Monday through Saturday leading up to the game?
Yeah, very little. We really put the hammer down when we were back in Kansas City and made sure that week we got everything installed.
Did you approach that like you were playing on that Sunday?
Yeah, basically we did, yeah. And that's how we went about it. We didn't leave anything we got to do this. Down in Miami, there are too many distractions and things that go on down there. Although we had good practices, we came out on the Monday, threw the pads on and practiced and got a good practice in there, and then just kind of carried it through the week with good practices. So, and the guys stayed focused when they were out there doing what they do. They had their media obligations and functions that they had to take care of, but when they were there, they worked their tail off.
So going into the game, and I know you say this all the time, you think you're going into every game, you're going to win. The way it starts, kind of an up-and-down game. By halftime, it's a tie game. But, you know, Mahomes felt a little off. But it's not like the Niners were humming. They only had 10 points. When you went in at half, and obviously it's a long halftime at Super Bowl, where was your mind at? Was there something specific that you guys had to tweak? Was there something big picture? Or where were you at?
Yeah, we felt... Protection-wise, we had to work a couple things out there. He was under a little stress there early, and so I could have done a better job just moving the pocket a little bit more. And so we started doing that the second half. He did. He had a couple of the picks, but listen, with the great ones, you keep firing, right? So
you said that. I saw the NFL films. You just kept telling them, keep firing.
Yeah, well, you do. Yeah, when I was growing up, I mean, we're the same age, but Larry Bird we'll keep shooting. You look at LeBron, who's the greatest player, arguably ever, and what did he do? Michael Jordan, what did he do? They keep shooting, man. So
Steph Curry could be 0 for 30.
Yeah, that's right. Keep shooting. And so here we are with this kid, and he's resilient to all that stuff. He's got a short memory, and he's a positive thinker, and he's confident. So, yeah, okay, he had a couple picks, and but let's go. With this offense, as explosive as it's been, and we had a little practice in the first two playoff games with this. So with that, you're never completely out of this thing until the buzzer goes off at the end. So we just, you know, he kept firing, and we kept dialing him up, and we went to a little bit of no huddle there in the fourth quarter to try to create some kind of rhythm as we went, and it worked out well.
So when he throws the pick, I think there was like 11:40 left in the game, and they were up 10 points, and the 49ers, best rushing team in the league. Where was your mind at? Because then, I mean, the clock is kind of your enemy then, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, our defense had really stepped up. So, defense just rose and had a couple great series there and stopped them. And then our offense started clicking. And they clicked fast. And so you got through that third and a gazillion there with the big play to Tyreek. And then, you know, it was here we come.
Then you scored with Kelsey, and then it was kind of on. But yeah. On that play, on the third and 15, you know, it's been written about and talked about. I know you drew it for Peter King. The Wasp, the play on in the Bay Area side, everyone thinks they're a coach, and they know what the corner is supposed to do. And if you're in, you know, if Mosley, 41, has that area, he's supposed to not break on the in-breaking route. But at the sticks, you know, on third and 15, you'd think he's not going to throw a deep bomb. So it's just a natural reaction for a corner. Is that the logic behind the play of knowing that they're going to run cover three and that guy more than likely is going to break on that in-breaking route?
Yeah, well, that's a complementary play, the Wasp is, to another play that we had run earlier. So you completely understand why he broke on it. And then it puts a safety in a bind. You completely understand what the safety did. Sometimes you get into those, we just, you know, you get your play. So everybody has these against them. And that just happened to be right there. It was just one of those that it was perfect coverage for the route. And it was a gotcha play. But I wouldn't sit there and go, well, this guy didn't do that and he didn't do that. I mean, it was one of those that, you get every once in a while. It just happened to be right there in the biggest game. It just happened. So, there.
14 and 10 are pretty good. So,
you 14 know, you, and 10 are good. And Kels kind of works the middle of that thing. And I was trying to give Peter King the drawing wasn't the actual play, it was an evolution into the play.
Yeah.
And then he printed that son of a buck. And I went, all right, well, you know, I was trying to coach him up on how you get to it. So,
you, as a play caller, you guys always talk about how you're thinking forward. Did you have, because third and 15 is not easy to complete, did you have in mind something you were going to call on fourth and 15?
Yeah, no.
There seven, would you have gone for it?
Right. Yeah. Well, at about that time,
you had to.
Yeah, you're down
clock's
by
ticking.
A couple scores, and you know, you surely think of that. Yeah.
Then let's fast forward. You score a couple touchdowns, take the lead. The 49ers kind of stumble, but on third and long, when the ball's in the air to Emmanuel Sanders, what's Andy Reid thinking?
I'm thinking we better hustle, or. Or it's he's got a trip, or it's got to be an overthrow, one of those two. But we were fortunate on that one. He split a double coverage on that. So he's a heck of a player.
You wanted him once upon a time, right?
And
he jumped to Denver.
Yeah, no, he did. He did. Son of a gun got away from us and picked himself up a Super Bowl win. So I didn't feel too bad that he didn't get one there. But he was just – Jimmy was off just by a tick. He's not going to miss many of those. And
no.
We were fortunate that that happened.
You played a lot of good teams in your career in the regular season and in the playoffs, but where would you rank that 49er team just top to bottom of all the squads you played?
Yeah, well, first of all, I really think they've got a phenomenal head coach. I think he does a great job. Kyle does. And their defensive coordinator, I just think, is one of the up-and-comers, man.
I like his hairdo.
Yeah, you know what? You and me both, man. It's you got yours right down to the bone, but mine's not far away. So
come on,
his
coach.
His is shined up, man. His is shined up. So
they played fast and physical all year.
Yeah, they do, and they're young, so they've got a good club, and they've got good coaches. So good players and good coaches normally lead to success.
For a rookie defensive end, I think he ended the game with 12 pressures, and his whole season was pretty dominant. What do you think of Nick Bosa?
Yeah, he was tough. He was tough. He, that was the third time we've had to face a Bosa.
I know.
You know, in the year. So his brother and
they never stopped coming.
No, there's something in that was in that refrigerator, man. They were eating the right thing. So his future is great. Sky's the limit for him. And listen, that whole defensive line is a good defensive line. So he's surrounded by good players. So chipping him, well, you chip him, you might have three other guys coming at you. So you can't chip them all. But he's a heck of a football player.
Two of them look like they should be in the NBA. They're enormous.
Yeah, both out of the same school, right? So
yeah.
That was a pretty good job of Oregon recruiting those guys.
Do you think it helped that your offensive line, especially the tackles over the years, have just played? You know, Khalil Mack was in the division forever, the two Chargers guys, and then obviously Vaughn forever, and they added Bradley Chubb. I know he got hurt this year, but a lot of highly paid defensive ends.
So I've got a bunch of guys that have played at Cleveland that we snuck onto our team, and Cleveland let go, and we were able to pick up. Andy Heck deserves a lot of the credit there on coaching those guys up, and I thought he developed these guys well. Eric Fisher was the first pick in the draft my first year at Kansas City, and I've watched him grow. He had his hands full with both bows, you know, throughout the year. But again, one thing he does, he battles.
He's come a long way.
Yeah, he's done a nice job.
So you win the Super Bowl, life change?
Yeah, life doesn't change other than, it's kind of a funny thing. You and I were together for a while there. So you have the 221, you've been fortunate enough to be on teams that have won 221 games. And then for 4 hours out there, you get 222, and it's a different deal. I mean, things do change. Perceptions and that it puts you in a different category, I guess you'd say. You're the same guy and you're going to coach the same way, but because of that Super Bowl, you know, you're looked at a little different. So which is an amazing thing about this business, but it's also why you work your tail off, and it's a tribute to all our guys. And we came up 4 inches short the year before, and we all did. I mean, D Ford kind of got the blame for it, but heck, we all could have played better. I mean,
yeah.
So
margins for errors in the big games are tiny, right?
That's right. That's right. Great. You know, it's a small margin there. There's a lot of parity once you get to that level. So you know, it was just the guys were on a mission to get this thing done, and it was great to be a part of and to watch. And now there's another great challenge. So once you get the taste of this, you sure want to go back. You understand though that it's a tremendous amount of work. You got to catch a few breaks in there. That's all kinds of ups and downs in the National Football League during the season. So
do you think that's going to be easy to inspire the guys, just knowing we're the hunted, everyone's coming for us, even though you kind of have been, but it's a different level when you are the Super Bowl champs?
Yeah, so like I said, I think there are a lot of variables that go into it. You know, how you stay healthy, that whole deal that, you know, works in there. There are going to be games that, like I said, the parity is like nuts in this league. So even in a normal game, the margin between winning and losing is like 7 points in there. So everything's narrowed down here that the ball bounces the wrong way for you. You might have played a heck of a game, but you might lose the game. So you got to have the ball bounce right for you, but you can't. The one thing that you can take care of is that work ethic, and so that's where we'll put our focus, and we'll put our focus on continuing to grow as a team. Take our young guys and more experience, open the package up a little bit for them, and keep growing.
What'd your phone look like after the game?
you know what? I had a little bit over 2,500 text messages, and you talk about humbling now. I mean, that was a humbling deal, and I tried to return every one of them. It was whether it was just a heart or a thumbs up, I was going to get everybody back. I respected the fact that people reached out. A pretty humbling deal.
Was there someone that you didn't expect that reached out?
No, not
someone you didn't know.
Yeah,
you know,
I mean,
maybe
I probably
like a president or something. I don't even mean a former, just someone, an actor. I don't even know.
Yeah, well, there were a few actors in there, but it wasn't there. It was people that I knew. I mean, it was you forget because you get so tied up in the season, and the season's fast and furious. You forget how many people that this business has brought you across and that you've met, and how many great people there are out there. And you've been blessed to, you know, have met.
What do you think about, I know you're just kind of diving into this class, the draft class, but there is a lot of hype behind it. It feels like a really talented group. And Veach reminded me, you got pick in every round, you know, a while.
Yeah. He's all fired up about it.
You got a first round pick to play with.
Yeah, that's right. So
unless you use it on a player again.
Yeah, you never know. Veach is good with that. I don't get crazy on it like I used to. Brett does a heck of a job with that. So he coaches me up on it. I go back, I look at the tape he wants me to look at, evaluate the guys that he wants me to dive in on. I used to watch everybody and watch every game of everybody, and I was crazy about that. But that's not the way that I do it now. And because I have full trust in him and, you know, what he's doing.
Is there an area in this draft for your team specifically that, you think that you got to be more aggressive at? Is there a position of need?
You know, I think where we're sitting, I think if you get crazy with that part, then you're going to get slighted, I think. So we're picking late.
In every round.
So you better go in with a pretty open mind and just say, let's do what we can. Take the best player to, you know, and then if it's close, then you got to go by position what you feel is your need. I'm not sure whether there's one absolute thing that we need, but building depth, as you know, is so important in this league, and we're always trying to create competition. We think that that's important. So I think that's the way Brett will attack it.
One big story right now, and it feels like the coaches kind of get left out of this, is the CBA. And maybe by the time I release this, the CBA will be agreed upon. But we hear so much about the players and what the owners are going to get. It feels like you guys just lose practice, lose more time. Is that something that you concern yourself with, or you just wait to find out the rules and then just go from there?
Yeah, well, we're not involved with the other part. So we're pretty adjust, you know, we can adjust to most things, a little bit chameleon, and we can change with whatever's delivered to us and go. So we hope that the respect is there, where it respects the opportunity for the betterment of the game, that we're able to have time to teach, and that's what we like doing and what we get paid to do. So, but whatever's dealt to us, we'll work around and through.
What's the balance? When I first got to you, it was 2010, so the year before they signed this new deal, and you could be a lot more physical. Double days exist, and I didn't know this, but coming from Pat Hill, I knew what a physical practice looked like, and you ran one too, and Deuce Daly was telling me, because the next year it became a lot softer just based on the rules, yet relative to the other teams, from what I hear, you still run, if not the most physical, one of the most physical camps. How do you balance that with the rules and something that you take a lot of pride in and drills that you're not going to get rid of, but it feels like the league almost wants to take away?
Yeah, well, I understand. I mean,
do you pad it up during the season anymore?
Have I had what?
Do you make them wear pads during the season, or are you just limited?
No,
the
I do.
Of times?
I take it up to the midpoint.
Yeah,
and then take the pads off. I go normally once a week to the midpoint once a week with the pads on, and then take them off. But look, I want the guys to practice fast, and I want it to be furious and go, and without sustaining concussions and injuries and all those things. We have things where you keep bodies off the ground. You use form tackling. Don't when we have tackling, whether it's a drill or in practice during camp, that you work your form tackling. Try to keep your head to the side and use your shoulders. Do those things. Let's not cut block and do all of that. We stay off the legs there. So there's some rules within the, you know, method of the madness, I guess you'd say, within the practice. But we try to practice as fast as we can and keep it as close to what you do in a game as we can, without killing our guys. I mean, you don't want to, these guys are trying to make a living, so we respect that part.
What are your thoughts on 17 games?
Yeah, well, I think it sounds like it's going to come to
fruition. Feels inevitable.
Yeah. So, but they'll work that out, whether it's taking a preseason game away, you know, whatever it might be. I'm not sure exactly what it's going to be, but whatever it is, it's always a give and a take. So, whatever is dealt there, I think it'll work out, and then we'll manage it. I mean, that's what we kind of
do. Yeah.
And we'll try to keep the players as healthy as we can, you know, as long as we can.
The playoff rules, the new ones, would affected you guys this year because the number two seed doesn't have a bye anymore, at least what I've seen reported. What do you think about that?
Yeah, so
it used to be a big deal to get a one or two seed.
Yeah, no, I know. I appreciate the rule the way it was this year.
Yeah.
So now maybe if it's just one, then we'll have to get that one seed.
What's for dinner?
That's a good question. You know, that's a real good question. I haven't even got that far yet. But
what's your favorite spot in Indy?
You know what? All these steakhouses around here are pretty good. I mean,
yeah, it's hard to beat.
Yeah, there's so many of them, and you're in the Midwest, and the cows don't have to travel far.
No. You have a favorite spot in Kansas City?
Kansas City, you know what? There are a ton of barbecue places there, and they all kind of have their little specialty. So if you're in the mood for something, you just go. And
Ribs.
Well, yeah, you know what? You're going to put me on the spot. A lot of places have good ribs. I must stay neutral because I eat it all
over. Right.
I want.
We don't want Andy getting cut off.
No, listen, I love all of them. But they're, you know what? Actually, there's some nice restaurants in Kansas City. Kansas City's a neat place, real neat place.
Well, congrats, Coach. Super Bowl champion. Sounds pretty sweet, huh?
Yeah, no, it does. You keep saying that. You're going to give me the business here, I know.
Thanks a lot for coming on. I really appreciate it.
All right, John. Appreciate you, man.
Well, that doesn't suck. You know, the guy wins Super Bowl and then has me to his room for a 30-minute interview. Again, I was not his defensive coordinator. I was not his general manager. I was a scout on the staff. In my first year, I was basically glorifying. I think I made $20,000-$25,000. Didn't even have health benefits. Then the next 2 years became full-time pro scout, college scout. But still, you see the way he treats me like he would treat, you know, his Matt Nagy or Sean McDermott or Doug Peterson or one of his other scouts. Just a really, really high-level, great human being. And I think when you read the way people got really excited for him when he won the Super Bowl, it's easy to see why. I was born and raised a diehard 49er fan. Now, it's changed, but the majority of people in my life were all in on the 49ers. No countless season ticket holders. Hell, I went to a bunch of games. I'm really involved with them still. Talk about them on Haberman Middlecoff. I mean, they're the Yankees to our show. We talk about them a lot. Their fan base is massive. Their fan base are my friends, are my neighbors. They are these people. And I could not root for him in the Super Bowl. I was starting to feel bad when he was down 10 points in the fourth quarter. And I was telling someone this. Might have been Ted Cruz, his PR guy, when he was taking me up to his room. I said, you know, if you're going to win the Super Bowl, you know, if you're going to lose the Super Bowl, you'd probably rather just get your ass kicked. Like, when you lose, like the way Kyle lost, definitely the Atlanta Super Bowl. Though, I always say, that's not on Kyle. Like, Dan Quinn was the head coach. Or the way Pete Carroll lost on that Malcolm Butler pick. Those are just gut-wrenching losses. Or some of the ways Belichick has lost to Eli. Those were a pretty big kick in the you-know-what. But if you're going to win it, I think, you know, if you could win it like a blowout fashion or a fourth quarter comeback, there's no doubt 1,000,000% you're going fourth quarter comeback. And that was a, you know, pretty epic way for a guy to kind of put it. It's weird because it's not like the icing on the cake, right? He's still going to coach. Hell, they're going to be a preseason Super Bowl favorite. As long as they got Mahomes, wouldn't we all be a little shocked if they don't make it back to the Super Bowl in the next 3 or 4 years? They might win. Hell, why couldn't they win it again this year? They're going to be really good. As long as they got Andy and they got Mahomes, they're going to be good. But his career was officially like Hall of Fame worthy, validated. It's set in stone. All the wins, the Hall of Fame. Or, I mean, all the wins plus the Super Bowl. Like, it's over. He's one of the all-time great coaches. And I'm a big believer in you don't deserve anything, but how hard the guy worked, how much success he had, it would have been a travesty if his career ended without a Super Bowl. And now it just shows you the way the world works. We might be talking in 7-8 years that Andy could have three. Just the way him and Mahomes could be an all-time duo, which I don't know who would. If I said right now, over under Andy Reid Super Bowls, 1.5, I'd probably take the over. 2.5, I'd think about it. I'll be a little surprised if they don't win another one. Quarterback's just too good. Coach Reed's too good of a coach. And he's as good of a human as you'll meet in pro sports. Anyone. I mean, that's top-notch human first and foremost. But let's talk about the combine, where I was talking to him. A couple things really jumped out to me. I think less, it's hard, because the sport of football is played in pads and a helmet. Unlike basketball, you could just have a 5-on-5 game and actually learn a lot. I can have a simulated AB in spring training and, like, can you hit a 90-mile-an-hour fastball? In football, I could have you do every freaking drill in shorts and a t-shirt. I really don't learn that much. I learn something about your athleticism, but I don't learn how you are as a football player. That's what makes the combine unique, is that really the majority of your evaluation is going to be based on the games. That's what you're taught in the scouting world, coaching world. Evaluate players off games, not off interviews, not off the combine work, not off what you hear. Watch the tape. It's why it's a grinder's league, because it takes a lot of time to watch tape and evaluate players. But going into this combine, and I say it all the time, like in the NBA, LeBron and Clutch and so many in the media want college basketball to die. And it kind of slowly has. It's a bad thing for sports, you know, for that sport. When I was growing up, everyone in the NBA, for the most part, went through college. Allen Iverson went to college for a couple years. Shaq went to college for years. Like, Michael Jordan went for 3 years. And we get to learn about the players, and then it builds the hype to these guys coming into the pro sports. So what the baseball's never really had, because no one watches college baseball, but college basketball and college football were feeder systems for the pros. And it's why the pros are on top, and we get to know these guys. When Zion came in, we'd already known a lot about them. Just like when you turn on the combine, some of the main players in the combine, it's like, we've been watching Tua for years. Joe Burrow, somewhat of a one-year wonder, but we watched basically every game he played this year. Herbert, we watched him play in the Rose Bowl. We watched him be a starter at Oregon forever. Isaiah Simmons, been a starter at Clemson, one of the best teams in the country for the last several years. Jonathan Taylor, starting running back for Wisconsin, played Saquon, played in all these big games against Michigan. We've been watching there's a ton of buildup. You know what people are like, are you pro-management? Are you pro-player? No, I'm just pro-making football, which selfishly pays for all my bills, as popular as possible. I want the game to keep growing, and college football plays a big role into that. So part of the reason the combine has become so big, if college football was irrelevant, the combine would not be as big, because we wouldn't know who we're watching. But when Isaiah Simmons runs a 4.39, it's like, damn, I just saw that dude making play after play in the national championship game for the last 2 years. Think about that. And he was a big winner. And I've talked to people in the league throughout the fall, and the one thing they come back to is, like, you know, your defensive coordinator better know how to use him. Because he's not a true inside linebacker, because he's not as physical. But I always counter with going, do you need to be as physical in 2020? I don't think it's a stack, shed, take your gap, make a tackle in the C-gap. Like Bill Romanowski, middle linebacker, go downhill, take on the fullback, keep your head, you know, to the left side. If the runner's to the left side, use your arm, shed the guy off, make a form tackle. Like those days, it's the whole deal so spread out. You got to be able to run and avoid blocks. In a perfect world, the Patrick Willises and the Luke Kuechlys, Ray Lewis, most guys are not going to take on blockers. They're going to go around them. And I'm fine with that. Back 10 years ago when I first got into scouting, like, you had to be able to take on blockers being physical. That doesn't bother me as much. But the number one question with this guy, well, can Isaiah Simmons, can he be like this hybrid defensive back? Well, when you run a 4.39, the big question with guys, like, you know, he's not big enough to play linebacker, but he's not fast enough to play safety.
Well, Simmons is what, like 6'3 and a half, 6'4, 220, whatever he is. When you run a 4.39, you're fast enough to play wherever. There, I read a good stat today. Only four wide receivers at the combine ran faster than Isaiah Simmons. So whether he's a linebacker, whether he's a free safety, whether he's a slot corner, when you're that big of a freak athlete, it's on the coach to figure out how to use this guy because he is way too talented. And what did Clemson have? Well, they had the highest paid assistant coach in the country in Will Venables, defensive coordinator. And he used him just fine because this guy was kicking ass and taking names for the last 3 years at Clemson. Or however, I definitely know he's been starting too. I'd have to Google whether he was a full-time starter or as a true freshman. But he's an elite player. And with that type speed, he can play in space if he has to play DB, right? He clearly has some like unique ability to be able to pass rush. Just a very versatile player. And in 2020 and moving forward, if Isaiah Simmons, let's say he's 20, 21 years old, if he's going to play for the next decade, well, the game's only going to spread out more. That's the way the rules are. So I would bet the farm on this guy. I don't see how he fails unless he gets to a spot with a bad defensive coordinator. Now, when you're going to go as high as him, there's a chance you're going to get with a bad defensive coordinator. That's the only thing that makes me nervous. But when you run that fast and move that well, and all of his athletic testing, I can't even speak right now, are in the all like 95-plus percentiles, and you have the game film of being a starter on that level of a team, it's going to be hard to fail. Jonathan Taylor. I'm a big Jonathan Taylor guy. I would imagine most people listening that watch Wisconsin play like him as well. He's a great player. He ran a 4.39. And I say it all the time, like when guys run at running back, we expect skill guys like corners, wide receivers to all be in the 4.4s. And especially corners. Wide receivers, you can be like a 4.59 guy if you're a physical player like a Juju or Devontae and make Keenan Allen ran slow. Certain, you know, specific type players can get away with running slow. It's hard to be a slow corner, but running back is the one position where top end speed, you could argue, is borderline irrelevant. Now, you can't run a 5.240 because I need you to be short area quick and explosive. But if you run a 4.6, you can be a really good running back in the NFL. Your longest runs might be 30, 35 yards, but most runs are. Besides like Adrian Peterson's or Saquon Barkley's, most guys aren't busting up like 80-yard runs. So this guy, who's a great in-between-the-tackle runner, he can also go outside, has this elite top-end speed. This guy might go in the first round. Now, he's got a couple knocks on him. And one is a legitimate knock. He fumbles the ball a lot. And that's something that makes coaches and personnel people nervous. There were some questions about him catching the football from just doing some digging around. I think it's more that they didn't throw him the ball, but anytime you have some fumbling issues, maybe people question, do you have natural hands? That'll be something that teams at his pro day or individual workouts, like I don't need to see him run between the cones, right? I know the guy has the vision, the ability to tote the rock. If I was personally working him out, if I was a team, whoever, in like the 20s, they were thinking about drafting Jonathan Taylor. Because if you're thinking about taking a guy that high, and he actually ran faster than Saquon Barkley. Now, Saquon's a better, probably more complete player. Zeke, another guy that came out recently, probably more complete player. But this guy's not far off. I would only run him through pass-catching drills. Now, if he can't catch the ball, then I don't think I could draft him that high. But if I take him, and my offensive coordinator and running back coach are there, and I'm just peppering him with passes, wheel routes, go routes, quick little routes from the slot, doing everything with, like I'd want to do with Saquon or Christian McCaffrey. If he can do that and I feel comfortable, and I try to take a quarterback with a strong arm because I want to be peppering him. If he can do that, I'd feel pretty good taking him. I love Jonathan Taylor. If he can catch the ball, he's going to be a stud running back in the NFL. Henry Ruggs, the video that went viral of him dunking the basketball is one of the most incredible viral videos I've ever seen from a guy in another sport. The thing that's going viral right now is Mike Trout that hit the golf ball. It looked like 700 yards. Well, if you told me Mike Trout, I give him a driver at Top Golf, what do you think's going to happen? I'd say, I would imagine he hits the ball like he's Brooks Koepka. So it's not that shocking when you talk it out. But when you see a guy that's under 6 feet dunking on people in the lane, and not just like mediocre dunks, I'm talking about looking like Russell Westbrook in the NBA. That is the video that I would show in the draft room. The wide receivers, there's a ton of hype. Judy's going to go high. Chenault, the kid from Colorado, would go high, but he's got a million injuries. The kid from Arizona State, Ayuku, I always screw up his name. He's going to go really high. He had a really good combine. But when you think about speed guys in 2020, you're not allowed to really touch him because he's not nervous about getting hit. If you hit him helmet to helmet, you're going to get tossed out of the game or flagged. Most teams don't really press anymore, and you're always nervous pressing fast guys. But it's one thing to press a fast guy 15 years ago when your free safety or strong safety could, you know, hit him right in the teeth and knock him out for the game. When I first got to the Eagles, DeSean Jackson used to get KO'd a ton of games, would get knocked out all the time, and he was an elite player. Like, there's a chance that Henry Ruggs is not as good as DeSean. But DeSean was getting KO'd early on in the, or like, 2010, 2011, 2012. Well, now what sucks for DeSean is he's old, but you can't hit the guys like that anymore. So I think Henry Ruggs is a borderline lock top 15 player just because his quality of elite speed and elite production are high. His athleticism is just off the charts. He played at Alabama, so you know he's tough. And then the rules. I would feel really, really comfortable taking him. If Jerry Jeudy's the first wide receiver off the board, I wouldn't be shocked if Ruggs is the second. Okay, let's get to the Middlecoff mailbag at John Middlecoff. Packed little show here on Tuesday. I'm recording this on a Monday. Hey, John, don't really have a question, but wanted to let you know I look forward to Tuesday and Friday mornings. Looking forward to watching you blow up over the next few years. Say I'm a fan from the start. I appreciate that. I really wasn't trying to read a complimentary Instagram on the air. Though, it makes you feel good. Not going to lie. Hey, brother, love the pod. What can the Vikings do to actually win the Super Bowl? Let's say, congrats, you're now the Vikings GM. That would actually... Could I live in California and be the GM for the Vikings? What would you do if you were given a couple years to work with? Well, I need a quarterback. It's a quarterback league, and I got Kirk Cousins. So I just need to find a way to get a top 10 quarterback. I'm paying $90 million the last 3 years for Cousins. And I guess we'll see what happens this year. But last year, you did win a game as a pretty big underdog on the road against the Saints. That was an impressive win. And Cousins made a couple throws in that game. But I think if we take a step back, the real reason they lost, the defense was just rattling Drew Brees. Mike Zimmer won that game. You know, Cousins made a big throw. I think it was a Thielen over his shoulder, or was it Diggs? I think it was Thielen. It was a great over-the-shoulder catch. Thielen has great ball skills, tracking ability. But I was at the Niner game. And after that first drive, when Cousins, they go right after Akella Weatherspoon with Diggs on the three plays, score a touchdown, they didn't do anything. Cousins is not good enough. And if you're good enough, now you don't need to be Patrick Mahomes, but you got no shot against the best in the business with Cousins. So I would weather one of these guys in the draft. Can I trade up? Could I trade Cousins and go sign one of these quarterbacks right now? I don't know. I got to figure something out because I got good enough players. I'd keep Diggs, keep Thielen, keep Cooks. Got Hunter, still got Harrison Smith, Kendricks. I got a great core. I just need a quarterback and a better offensive line. Heard you talk Monday on the Ham Pod about CeeDee Lamb being undersized and going in round two. Can you explain why you say that? I heard you say a source told you he was 175. The official numbers of the combine had him at 198 and is arguably the best wide receiver draft. What are you hearing that makes you think he's a day two pick? Yeah, maybe I misspoke on that. Because when I was out to dinner with some buddies on the day before I left, I guess he was 170, 175 pounds when he first got to the program. He's obviously put on weight. There were some questions, is he a thinner guy? And I think sometimes at the combine, these guys are athletic freaks. They can just put on a ton of fake muscle for the combine. Now, I'm a CeeDee Lamb fan. He's got some Devontae Adams to him. I'd have to check his testing numbers. Maybe it was unfair to say he's going in the second round. Like, I still think, I would guess he goes somewhere between 20 and 35 in that range. But do I think he goes top 15? Probably not. He's pretty hyped on Twitter. I think the hype on Twitter might be a little stronger than in reality. But yeah, he's bigger than I said he was. I heard with Colin talking about quarterback being mostly about above the shoulders. Why are both of you so low on Burrow when his number one characteristic is his mind? What am I missing? If you love Baker, isn't he Baker but a harder worker and better athlete? Yeah, but I'm not saying I don't love Joe Burrow. I would take him number one overall. I think when Colin just says he's not some all-time great prospect, just he was a one-year wonder. He went from being a mid-round guy to overnight being the number one overall pick. Trevor Lawrence been the number one overall pick for 3 years. Andrew Luck was the number one overall pick for years. You know, Cam Newton was a five-star guy and then got derailed because he got in trouble stealing the laptops, but he was a super hyped guy from day one. Joe Burrow, you know, somewhat, I know he went to Ohio State, but he wasn't some five-star recruit. You know, he's really good. He's going to go number one overall. I think he's like a much better version of like Alex Smith coming out of Utah, and he had just an incredible season. But just, you just never know. You just, maybe I'm being too harsh. I'm trying to think of a negative I have. I'm not anti-Joe Burrow. I would take him number one overall. I think he could be a top 10 starter in the league. Maybe one day he could be number best quarterback in the league. I doubt he doesn't have the arm of Mahomes. Not quite the athlete of like Russell or, you know, he could be Deshaun. Like Deshaun. I mean, there's nothing, like Deshaun is not the most physically gifted guy. But he just has elite intangibles, elite worker, just elite instincts for the position. Maybe that's Joe Burrow. So maybe he's Deshaun Watson. That actually might be a good comp. Deshaun Watson. That might be my comp for him moving forward. Two separate questions. How are scouts, coaches, and GMs leveraging combine performances against the game film, and what drills are coaches looking for the closest? Well, I think you always look at the 40 time, and sometimes that's not the smart move, but we're all humans. And then it just depends what position you're at. If you're a wide receiver, the short shuttle and the three cone are big, how you move, because that's how you break in routes. If you're a corner, the 40 is definitely big, and vertical jumps big. Offensive linemen, you could argue the drills don't mean a damn thing. Quarterbacks, the drills that matter are the interviews, because I got your tape, and then I just want to talk to you. So I think every scout is different. At the end of the day, the combine is a small, small piece of the pie. The main thing you're looking at is the game tape. That's what is make or breaking, guys, for sure. Love the show and how you only talk football. Wish you were on every day. Keep up the great work. Well, I'm on every day. I talk on Twitter every day, at John Middlecoff. I do a daily Periscope on Twitter, on my Twitter account. I have another podcast that's 3 days a week, so I feel like I just do a relentless amount of content. My voice sometimes by Wednesday or Thursday is just pooped. Take a little sip of water to keep the vocal cords moist. Hey, John. Good day. Love the pod. Saw your show, got downloaded on my Herd Network, listened, and now I listen to the show. Thanks for recording it the day before and posting it early. Well, I mean, Mike actually does that. I just record it, and then we got a little squad. We post that bad boy, and then thanks for Colin's podcast to put us on there, and then we just keep rolling. I appreciate the kind words. It's been a little too much of inflating my ego here on these pods. Do you see the NFL switching things up in regards to primetime matchups? It seems they do a good job of making sure everybody gets a fair share of primetime slots. Even though we all know only a handful of teams carry a fan base that puts up more substantial numbers, i.e. the Cowboys, Patriots, Packers, etc. Not really interested in all the primetime games that include struggling Panthers, Bengals, Falcons. What are your thoughts? Well, I think there is a number of games that you can max out at, and I think it's five. Now, if you get flexed the last week like the Niners, Seattle did, then I think they can go six, but they can't just put the Cowboys on every Sunday or Monday night game. I do think they try to give some other teams chances to shine or teams that they think are going to be good. So, like the Broncos, for example, they went 7-9, Drew Lock. Let's say they think the Broncos might compete for a wild card. They might get a Monday and a Sunday night game. Now, ideally, it's in a position in the Sunday night game where if they're bad, you can flex them out. But the Cowboys, Eagles, next year the Niners, Seattle, Patriots, assuming Brady stays, but even if he doesn't, they'll Packers, Pittsburgh. Like, you play, they play the hits. I think they do a pretty good job, to be honest with you. Okay. Many coaches and talent evaluators seem to have strong suits in terms of identifying talent at certain spots on the football field, and others that say that sometimes struggle with, for example, Belichick drafting wide receivers. What positions do you feel most confident in evaluating, and what positions do you struggle with the most? I feel very, very confident when it comes to running backs and wide receivers. And pass rushers. Now, the overall, like, game of a defensive lineman is, can be a little difficult just for specific schemes. But if I know the scheme that we're running on defense, I feel pretty good with defensive linemen. So I would go running backs, wide receivers, defensive linemen. If I know a lot about the quarterback upstairs, I think I have a chance, but like even Bill Walsh, you're going to miss. Like, the quarterbacks are hard. The hardest for me by far DBs, because you got to be able to balance and factor in the coverages, know what they're doing. The DBs are just really hard. Safety is really, really difficult. Even linebackers might be getting a little easier, but they're actually becoming more of like a hybrid DB. So that's tough. Anything that involves coverages is a difficult task. I would say offense I feel very, very confident of. But I work for two offensive head coaches. So when I was at Fresno State, we produced NFL offensive linemen. We produced NFL wide receivers and NFL running backs. So I was around them. And then when I got to Philly, Shady, Deshaun, Jeremy Maclin, Brent Celek, I just saw a lot of really good, and then Jason Peters, Jason Kelsey, just was around a lot of good players on offense. Defense can just be more difficult. So I'm an offensive guy. I would just lean offense. But I defensive lineman for the most part. Now, I can be overly critical. Like, I didn't love Nick Bosa last year, and I was clearly way too low. But was I just because I like Quinnen Williams more? Was it because sometimes I can overreact to injuries, and when the injured guys, I'm out on. But hell, I would have probably been out on Steph Curry after he kept rolling his ankles in like 2010 and 2011. I would have been wrong. You know, Bosa, I thought he was always going to get hurt. Hell, when the Niners drafted him, he got hurt. I went to OTAs, the first OTA practice, he got hurt. His first training camp practice, he got hurt. And then the season started and he kicked the shit out of everybody. Quick one. Why all the hype for Rivers? Is he really what Indy needs? Are they not better drafting a young guy and building around him? Or am I missing something? Well, I think the game plan for them is simple. You sign Rivers, you trade Jacoby, and you draft Jordan Love. So you have Jordan Love learn from Phillip Rivers for 2 years. And hell, if Jordan Love's ready after this year, he starts next year. But Jordan Love's not ready to play in 2020. And the Colts are trying to make the playoffs. So you get Phillip Rivers, you try to make the playoffs this year. He teaches Jordan Love all the tricks of the trade in a year or two. Hopefully he has still something left, because that's what you're betting on if you sign him. And then you go right into 2021, 2022 with Jordan Love as your quarterback. That's what I think the game plan is. I listen to your show religiously. Appreciate it. In my opinion, your hands down have the best takes on things, for sure the most realistic. Thanks. But I got to know, you look nothing like what I pictured from listening to you on the podcast. Are you really bald, or could you grow a full head of hair if you wanted? Not trying to offend you, just overly curious. I'm offended by this. I don't know anyone. I had a pretty good head of hair. I had thick, thick hair. When I was young, my dad used to force me to get my hair cut really, really short, like ones and twos. And looking back, my dad's no longer with me. But it's that pisses me off even thinking about it. It's like, Dad, my dad was bald at the time too. It's like, Dad, I have hair. Let me rock it how I want to rock it. When I have young children, we're going to go mohawks. We're going to go long hair. We're going to do everything possible, because one day that kid's hair is probably going to disappear. But no, would I shave my head with a Bic razor if I had my sweet hair still? Sweet would be strong, but I had a solid head of hair. No, I would not. So I'm bald. And I'm not receding hair bald. I'm cul-de-sac bald, where I still have some hair strands on the top of my hair, on top of my head. But if I grow it out and you took a picture, all you would see was scalp.
So I shaved my head strictly because probably around my early 20s, I remember being at Cal Poly and seeing hair follicles fall on my desk, is that, yeah, I just got bad hair genetics. I'm bald. My brother's bald. My dad was bald. My grandparents were bald. My cousins are bald. Just a bald freaking family. So if Brady signs with the Raiders, do you see the Patriots looking to trade for Carr? I know he's not a cold-weather quarterback, but I think he can excel in Belichick's system. I actually agree. They get rid of the ball really quickly. He's not a terrible fit. Here's where it is a bad fit. Derek can be really, really sensitive. And the Boston is not a sensitive town. They eat sensitive people for breakfast. Remember when Adrian Gonzalez, the first baseman for the Dodgers, when he signed there after he got traded for the Padres, mentally broke. The Red Sox used to break players left and right. For the most part, Belichick doesn't really acquire many mentally weak guys because you just don't last. He'll just cut you. I also think the hard part for Derek would be he's replacing Brady. So if Brady were to leave, for him to fill Brady's shoes, that's impossible. I wouldn't wish that upon anybody, to try to fill Tom Brady's shoes. Think about how difficult that would be. I mean, just think about that for a second. It's like Michael Jordan or Mickey Mantle or whoever the next point guard of the Warriors is. It's like it's a no-win situation. But yeah, from a physical standpoint and just what he does well, getting rid of the ball quickly, I think he'd be good. Love your Nagy Pod, Straight Heat. Thanks for asking the tough questions in a way they'll answer. I think the Bears are in on Derek Carr early. They just can't say because if it falls through, Mitch is still on the roster. They got to be looking at Carr. See, I ask him a little bit off the record, I really don't bug him with inside information on stuff like that just because it's a weird spot for me because I know him so well, and I don't think they are. And I'm being completely honest. And just talking from other people, I think they're going to end up, and I know the story surfaced a little bit, is I think Andy Dalton's a Bear. I think what makes it difficult for Derek is Derek's still good enough. Like, are they going to give? I think they have the Raiders' second-round pick, so it's pick 43. They're going to give up pick 43 for Derek Carr, or they could just get Andy Dalton for like a fifth-round pick or fourth-round pick. He's a much easier player to acquire. Derek Sneaky wouldn't be cheap for them. My question is regarding the Niners, which I'm a big fan since the Bowman years. So you're pretty young. The fact that the salary cap is supposed to be around $200 million, would the Niners have enough money to sign Armstead, Kittle, and company? I think if they sign Kittle and Buckner, it's very difficult to keep Armstead. If they sign Buckner and Armstead and they wait till next year to sign Kittle, I think they would have some room. Now, if they wanted to sign Armstead, extend Buckner, and extend Kittle, they probably need to trade D Ford. So, because they already have Jimmy's under contract for mid-20s. Richard makes like 10. Staley makes a lot. McGlinchey was a high pick. He makes a lot. Nick Bosa was the second pick in the draft. He makes like 7 or 8 million. It just kind of adds up fast. Now, luckily, Fred Warner, Kwaski Tart, they got some guys that make relatively small amounts. Debo, second round pick, probably like a million. But yeah, it does get a little complicated for sure. Luckily, the salary cap has gone up so much that they're gonna have the opportunity to try to keep some of these guys. Thoughts post quarterback combine on my Eason question. I honestly haven't even seen Eason's athletic testing. My issue overall with him is he looks the part. I saw a picture of him, Herbert, and Burrow. I think Peter King's article. And he's the best looking one of the three. He towers over Burrow. Right next to Herbert, he looks just as sweet. When I watched him play this year for Chris Peterson, and he had been in the offense for 2 years, because remember, he transferred and had a red shirt. I saw a slow-footed, slow-processing player. Now, when he gets it perfect, it looks awesome because he's got a big arm. But he's not a great athlete. Again, I don't know what he ran or whatever. I don't care. I always felt like he was slow-footed when I watched him. And he's just not a great decision-maker. Now, I was at dinner on Wednesday night, and Bruce Arians was there. And Eason came up. And someone at the table was like, I could see, and he pointed at BA. Luckily, he was like drinking a cocktail, not looking at us. I could see him liking Eason. And you go, you know, big arm guy, poor man's version of Carson Palmer. Maybe it's not that crazy. I could not draft him.
probably any earlier in like the fourth round. Maybe I'm being too harsh, but I'm not afraid to be like, when I don't like a guy, I just don't like a guy. It's the draft is still value, but I don't like just, if I don't like a house, I'm not just going to buy it, even if it's cheap. Why is no one talking about the depth concerns at D-line, safety, and linebacker, and are just worried about wide receiver and corner? Oh, big Eagles fan here. In my opinion, they need a safety before anyone else. Also, what player do you think that they will pick at 21? Well, I think they could definitely go wide receiver, but I also think you're right. They could easily go defensive back. And their defensive backs last year were, their corners were bad. Their safety, I mean, Malcolm's old. Yeah, they could easily go defensive back. So I would say they go defensive back or they go wide receiver. Don't need tight ends. Don't need a running back. Don't need a quarterback. Have tackles. Have a center and guard. They could always go D-line, I guess. But yeah, I think they could easily justify going DB high. What is one player the Niners should draft in the first round? I would probably take a guard or a center. I mean, their guard and center, Richburg tore his knee. Their guards are average. The reason they lost the Super Bowl, they could not protect and they could not block Chris Jones. And you could go, well, John, no one can really block Chris Jones. The Niners had no chance. None. He was going around those guys like they were a blocking dummy. It was embarrassing. And their tackles, Joe Staley and McGlinchey are fine. You got Kittle and you got Juszczyk to help out in the run game. But the guard and center just were not good enough. And it's not always sexy to take a guard or center high, but if you get it right, they're usually pretty good. Now, Kyle and John haven't done it. The last time the Niners took a guard really high, they traded into the first round, and they took Josh Garnett, the offensive lineman from Stanford, and he was a bust. Does the Hawaii football team show an adequate template for the viability of an NFL team moving to London? Since both are an ocean away from the U.S. mainland, God, I like this question. Or are logistical differences between college and pro too different? Yeah, it is. It's very different because your college roster is your college roster. So you have 100 guys on your team. If you get an injury, you just next man up. Redshirt guy comes up, whatever. In the NFL, you're constantly signing and cutting new players. So if I lose two players to injury in week three, and I'm playing the Chicago Bears, and I fly home, well, once I get there on Monday morning to London, I was thinking about going to Hawaii, but London, I'm going to need a guard and a center. Well, or whatever positions I lost. When I was in Philly, if we needed a certain position, sometimes we'd bring in, we have a short list of the best wide receivers. Let's say a wide receiver broke his leg. We need to bring in a wide receiver. So you bring in three wide receivers, and they work out against all three of them at the same time, and then you sign the best one. Think how difficult that is. In Philly, it's like, well, one guy's in Chicago, the other guy's in Texas, one guy's in Florida. Well, they're all going to be there relatively the same time. What if one guy's in L.A., one guy's in Seattle, and the other guy's in New York? Like, they're going to get there at different times. It logistically become, to me, that's the most difficult part, is flying guys in and out. The games, whatever, they figure it out. It would just be your roster. Bringing a new practice squad guys, that would be a challenge. But I feel it's kind of inevitable. That's another just positive podcast line. I'll respond one-on-one. Appreciate everyone listening. Hope you guys enjoyed the show. And I appreciate all the kind words. Again, go to 3 and Out Podcast. Like, or not like, but leave her a little review if you could, if you like the show. I appreciate it. Apple appreciates it. And yeah, happy combine. It's over, and we'll just keep on humming with free agency right around the corner. Let's do it, baby.